This is Rebecca Jernigan, your tour guide into discoveries, coming to you live simulcast from the heart of America to around the globe via the World Wide Web, satellite, and terrestrial radio. Let's journey together into the realms of the unknown to the known in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth. Good evening. I am here in the heart of America, Kansas City, broadcasting live and heard on the Journeys with Rebecca Radio Network and, of course, all of my great affiliates. So please be sure to check them out by checking into all of the links and the banners found throughout the Journeys with Rebecca website. And welcome to tonight's show. This is a fantastic show. Tonight's guest is a return guest, and he really needs no introduction, but tonight's guest is David Icke. And I am truly honored to have been able to record this show with him only just a few short days ago. So it's timely, it's on point. He has brought out another book, and that name of that new book is called Human Race, Get Off of Your Knees, The Lion Sleeps No More. You will find this interview with David passionate, clear, concise, and revealing. It should hit home for all of you. I know it did me. David tells his research like no one else can, and he connects the dots. Now be sure to check out his website. That's davidicke.com, and of course you can find those links on the front page of my website. Do please enjoy this show. And for tonight, do join us in the chat room. You can get to that right from the front page of my website. On the right side, there's a button that says Listen Live. Click on it, it will take you in there. Now for tonight, we are not taking questions specifically from the audience, as this was a pre-recorded show with David earlier. But I will be in there, and so will the monitors, so we can have great conversations nonetheless. And don't forget to donate, because donations are needed to keep this journey going, again, with all the great guests and information, and you can use those donation buttons found throughout the website. And remember, for your donation, you can now receive your own unique Orgon generators. So you can check out the links on the donation buttons and make that donation today. And truly, a huge thanks to all of you who have donated. It helps keeping this journey going. And please be sure to check out my friends Carrie Cassidy and Bill Ryan of Project CamelotPortal.org. Let's journey together. Stay with us. We'll be right back with David Icke. Hi, this is Rebecca. You know, for a few years now, I've talked to you about my friends and colleagues from Certified Psychics. So I'm really excited to let you know about a new service they provide their clients. They have a method of where you can book your appointment with your favorite or popular reader in advance, so to be sure to get connected. Of course, it's always private and confidential. Now, they still offer on-the-spot readings by their gifted psychics, who their gifts really are top-notch. Or email and live chat readings are still available too. You know, so there's a lot of methods to suit your needs so you can get your questions answered when and how it's convenient for you. So call 1-800-717-7887 or log on to certifiedpsychics.com.
You're a small business owner, but you're not advertising. You believe that the economy is still stagnant, that consumers are hanging on to their money. You think maybe you'll spend a little on advertising once things start to pick up, but you know what? By then, it'll be too late. Your competitors will already be advertising and taking a big fat chunk of your market share. You'll have totally missed the boat. The train will have left the station, and there you'll be standing all alone on the platform, watching slack-jawed as customers pass you by. Why? Because they don't know you're there, because you didn't advertise, because you didn't think it was worth it. Every moment of every day, someone is buying something. People are shopping right this second, making choices, making purchases, and if you're not talking to them, someone else is. Advertising greases the wheels of commerce, fuels the engines of economic expansion, connects consumers with companies and buyers with sellers. Advertising. It works. Your competitors know this. Why don't you? A message from the Radio Advertising Bureau, Adweek Magazine, this radio station, and the famous Radio Ranch.
Journeys with Rebecca is sponsored by Fate Magazine. Published continuously since 1948, Fate is the longest-running publication of its kind. Find out more at www.fatemag.com.
Email Rebecca with your comments to mailbag@journeyswithrebecca.com. You're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
So I guess what we want to do maybe first is just welcome you to the show, and I want to introduce your new book that you have, and when is it to be released again?
It's actually in transit now from the printers, so it's going out to America, it's coming to Britain, and it's going to be available through my website. In fact, it's available for pre-order now, and it's the biggest work I've ever done, Rebecca. It's nearly 700 pages. It's 355,000 words, 325 illustrations, and on top of that, 32 pages of original color artwork by my artist friend Neil Haig. It's probably two or three books in one, but because I dot connect, I like to get as many dots connected as I can between two covers, because all the books that I've written have different emphasis, but they are stepping stones on a journey. And this is the next step on the journey, and it's going to be extremely controversial. It's going to be controversial even among those who are in what you might call the conspiracy research arena and the spiritual arena. It's going to get reaction from people in the political side as well, because of what's in there. And it's just an extraordinarily controversial book, because the truth is controversial in a world that is founded on lies, deceit, and mendacity. And it's called Human Race, Get Off Your Knees, because that's what we need to do, because that's where we've been all this time. That's how we got into this mess. But the subtitle is The Lion Sleeps No More. And it's got an image, a painted original image of a lion on the front with its with a world on its face. And The Lion Sleeps No More refers to something that I first talked about 20 years ago, because it's 20 years almost to the day, I mean, 31st of March it was, in 1990, that I walked into a psychic's house to try to understand what was going on around me, this strange presence I had around me for about a year, which got stronger and stronger. And it got to the point where when I was in a room alone, it was like I wasn't alone. It was so tangible. And so I went to see the psychic in March 1990, not telling her what I'd gone for, just that I wanted some hands-on healing, which I kind of did with my arthritis, but that wasn't the main reason. And she came out with all this stuff about how I was going to go out on a world stage and reveal great secrets. One man cannot change the world, but one man can communicate the message that can change the world, and things like that. And at the time I thought, you know, what are you talking about? But what was interesting is from that moment, amazingly synchronistic things started to happen to me, and they're continuing to this day. But the theme that was there right at the start was of a vibrational change that was coming, that was in the process of coming then, that was going to wake people up. And that's why the first book I ever wrote after that psychic experience was called Truth Vibrations. That's the name I gave to this vibrational change, because what I understood was that it was going to act like a spiritual alarm clock, in the sense that it was going to break up the density that people have around them, the density of energy fields, the density of auric fields that was holding us in a domination by five sense reality. That most people filter their sense of reality and who they are through the five senses. They look in the mirror and think that's who they are. They judge everything that goes on in the world via the five senses, which sees things as apart from everything else, instead of the unity, seeing the unity of everything. And so I learned in those very, very early days that this vibrational change was coming, these truth vibrations. And at the time, there seemed no evidence of, A, that this breaking up of density, and people were going to wake up and see things in a way they hadn't seen before, both about themselves and the world. And nor, at that time, was the other aspect of the truth vibrations obvious, and that was that they were going to bring to the surface all that had been hidden, individually and collectively. But of course, 20 years later, the evidence is there for anyone to see who wants to actually open their eyes and look at it. You know, my life for the last 20 years has been about bringing to the surface all that's been hidden. I've gone through the process, as so many people have, of seeing the true self as opposed to the fake self, which we identify with the name and our job. Who are you? I'm Fred Jones, and I work down the bank. No, that's what you're experiencing. It's not who you are.
Right.
And the subtitle, The Lion Sleeps No More, the lion is the way I and Neil Haig, the artist, symbolize these truth vibrations. It's like the lion waking up from the slumber, and instead of being little me, I got no power, what can I do, suddenly the chest expands and it's like, who am I? I am all that is, has been, and ever will be, thank you very much. And I'm going to take control of my experience back, and I'm going to start living life instead of letting life live me. And this is happening more and more and more, and it's this that is going to bring the control system down, because people, and I understand it, they look at what is happening in the world and how the control system is imposing itself more and more every day on the surface. But there are other forces at work here, and that control system is coming down. And something else, Rebecca, that I've understood more and more as the years have gone, that it's no coincidence that as these truth vibrations manifest themselves and affect people more and more, wake people up from the amnesia, from the density, from the five sense prison, that this is the very same period when this control system is trying to impose the more and more extreme versions of the Orwellian global state, more and more control, more and more stuff in food and drink that destabilizes the body electrochemically. The microchipping agenda, where they want to microchip every child at birth, eventually, that's what they want, not necessarily they're going to get, is about, on one level, yes, electronic tagging, seeing where everyone is at any time. But the real reason for that is to externally manipulate the receiver transmitter system, if you like, the body, the crystalline body computer, as I call it, through which our consciousness experiences this reality we call visible light, this tiny frequency range we call visible light. And the idea is to manipulate the body's receiver transmission system so that we do not start to expand our ability to access these higher vibrations I call the truth vibrations, and we stay in these low density states of fear and frustration and all these low vibrational states that hold us in servitude. See, society is structured to stimulate maximum fear, maximum stress, maximum frustration, maximum anger and hatred and all these things, because these states are low vibrational states of being. And if you're in a low vibrational state of being, just as radio A is not going to sync with radio B because they're on different wavelengths, so a density is not going to sync with high levels of vibration where real understanding, awareness, knowledge, and love in its true sense express themselves. So I see this now massive, and round of applause, good thing, this massive research arena to expose the conspiracy, which has built up over the last few years. But to really understand what is happening in terms of the banking scams and the manipulated wars and the Orwellian surveillance agenda, we've really got to understand the nature of reality itself, because the bottom line of it all is to hold us in a low vibrational state so that we do not access the true magnitude, the lion, the higher levels of infinite consciousness that we really are. We don't access them while in the physical body, what we call physical anyway, and therefore we are completely at the mercy of the five senses. And of course, when you are getting everything through the five senses to get a grip or a grasp on who you are and where you are and what's going on, you're going to look into the five sense reality to get that information. So where do we look? We look to the education system, we look to the media, we look to our peers and what have you. And if you can disconnect what you call incarnate consciousness from higher levels of itself beyond this reality, and then program the five sense level of being with a fake sense of self, a fake sense of the world, a fake sense of reality by controlling the sources of information that we receive at that level, then what you're doing is you're isolating people from their true self and then programming the fake self. And that's why people live their entire lives like an actor. You know, all the world's a stage and we are the players. We're acting a part. It's not who we are. You know, it's like being on a bus sitting at the back and someone else has got their hands on the wheel in terms of the direction it's going and all the rest of it. And so getting out of what I call mind, which is this mind-body level of perception, and into what I call consciousness, that which is the eternal self, is the revolution. It is the transformation. Because once you move your point of observation from five sense reality alone to higher levels of consciousness, then you see this world in a completely different way, because you're looking at it from a completely different standpoint, point of observation, in which case our lives transform and our perception of self and the world transforms. And this is what the truth vibrations are doing. They're teasing open that mind by breaking down the density that we've lived with all this time.
And, you know, first of all, I want to get back to some of your earlier comments and kind of comment through as we go along here. You know, you talk about your book being controversial, and in all truth and honesty, in my perspective, this particular book, as you're talking about it, is probably one of the most controversial. But, David, that is your kind of your mission, I guess, is to be controversial, because in that controversy, it opens people up, even though some people may get angry or they may poo-poo it or whatever their reaction is to it, it still has planted a seed for somewhere along the line that perhaps maybe there's something to what you've been saying all these years. So that's what you call the truth vibration. And I have seen such a tremendous amount. I don't know, you know, you see so many people all the time. You're just an extremely busy man, and you interact with an awful lot of people. But I'm sure in your own circle of acquaintances and friends and family, that you yourself have probably witnessed these truth vibrations, and that's an absolutely fantastic term, at work, at play, if you will, and watch people literally from one day to the next that seems like they're getting it. They're getting it.
Well, this is an interesting point, because over the last 20 years, I've seen this transformation happen. When I started out 2 decades ago, people just laughed at me. There was no real sign that there was any transformation coming. But all these years later, my goodness me, and what's interesting, Rebecca, to me, is that I'm seeing people moving, if you like, distances in terms of perception.
Yes.
Massive distances very, very quickly. And you can do this. Once the veil lifts, then you can move very fast, because there's like a line, there's like a Rubicon, and when you cross it, and that line is a certain level of perception of what reality is, suddenly things fall into place so fast because you're no longer looking from a fake, false perspective to try to get a fix on the world. You're looking from a perspective of seeing the world as it really is. And then all these mysteries and questions and stuff, they start to fall. They're not mysteries anymore. So many mysteries are only mysteries because we've been looking at them from the wrong point of what is reality.
Correct.
This is why science has all these cul-de-sacs all over in its various disciplines, where it can't go any further if the paradigm that it has been saying is how life is and how the world is and the universe is correct.
Right.
Okay? You can't. You've got to rethink or re-know the way that reality works. And then these cul-de-sacs, which are cul-de-sacs because there are major questions eventually that simply can't be answered on the basis of this is how reality is, then those questions just answer themselves. It's so obvious. And I know that there are more and more mainstream scientists who are looking at my books, and this one takes that whole side massive step forward.
Wow,
and are
cool.
Saying, well, hold on a second, you know, maybe this does make sense, because if what this fella's saying is true, then we can answer this mystery, we can answer that mystery, and answer that mystery, because they're not mysteries, you know. I mean, if you are looking for someone, and you look everywhere except where they are, because you refuse to go where they are, then you're going to come back and say, oh no, can't be found, there's no sign of them, they've gone missing, they've disappeared. But they're not disappeared. They're actually where you are refusing to go. And this is where mainstream science is. It refuses to go where the answers lie. Why? Because science is not there to answer mysteries. It is to keep them as mysteries. This is why these bloodline families that I've been exposing all these years, they have made sure that they control the funding and the administration of science.
Sure.
And if you don't sing from the song sheet as a scientist, then your funding stops. You find yourself losing credibility among your peers because you're getting ridiculed and marginalized for saying these crazy things. And therefore, science, mainstream science as a structure, as an institution, is there to stop the answers coming out. And I know mainstream scientists who are, you know, could scream with frustration because they think, well, I'm between the devil and the deep blue sea here. If I pursue where I sure the answers lie, I lose my funding and all that stuff. And if I don't, I'll never find the answers, but I'll get me funding. And what I say to those people is, look, you know, when you're on your deathbed and you're about to leave this reality, you know, what will you feel good about yourself because you've pursued the truth despite the consequences? And it's amazing, if you pursue the truth and you get lots of challenges, it's amazing how you find ways around them. Or are you going to, what are you going to feel about yourself if you're on that same deathbed thinking, well, I didn't actually impact on the world at all. I just got a bloody good living for a few years by acquiescing my truth to this establishment structure that has been created totally to stop truth coming out.
Sure. And you know, and you talk about people's perspective being, you know, widened more, and it's so very true. I look at this world, David, from a whole different perspective than you know. It's, I'm actually amazed. I sit back and I look at myself as when I was, you know, a young girl, and how I viewed the world in those days. And when you think about how your future is going to look to you, you just can't fathom, you can't understand until you get to the point where everything shifts around you. And as I'm looking at this world, the way that it's constructed, there isn't anything, not one single thing in a day-to-day basis that we as human beings, for the most part, experience that isn't very well constructed, laid out, planned out, and in total control of the actions and our day-to-day life of the human being. It's been just absolutely fascinating as I look at this and I go, there isn't one single space that does not, that this construct, I call it the construct, matrix, the control mechanisms, have not integrated themselves so completely, so wholly into the human experience. It's not even, it's just amazing. I mean, even from how do we eat, when do we eat, that you have to go here to do that. And, you know, this whole thing with the whole money situation where every day, more and more of the working people, if you will, their money is being taken away from them, from new laws and new taxes, and, you know, we have to have funding for this and funding for that and funding for everything, right? And it has gotten to be such a vicious cycle. And they're also, you spoke about that earlier, about how all of this is happening, and it's like they're stepping up their game to try to get more and more and more of it. And I just see it as an extreme implosion upcoming. I really do, with this whole construct thing.
It isn't an implosion, but like I was saying, the book is controversial, and one area where it's going to be extremely controversial is how I explain why what you quite rightly described is A, happening, and B, possible. And it's interesting, you know, I've got this theme of the last 20 years at the moment because it is, you know, so close to the two decades. But I have realized in the writing of this book how all the different things that have happened to me in the last two decades have all dovetailed and have all made a contribution to what I'm writing in this book. And these themes have been that we live in a virtual reality universe that has been hacked into by a manipulative controlling force, and it's exactly the same principle as the fact that you can go on the internet in most parts of the world, and you can go anywhere on that internet that you choose to go, at least you can at the moment, but if you go to China, you can't. The Chinese computer system has been firewalled off so that Chinese people can only access part of that collective reality we call the internet, and not vast swathes of it. Now, I have realized over the years, through various connected ways, that is the situation that we face in this reality. How I've explained it in the book is this: the suns within this universe interact with the black holes. I think some German scientists have established, and after a long project, that there's a black hole at the center of this galaxy. It absolutely fits. Mm-hmm. Because out of the black holes comes the vibration, and that vibration stimulates photon release from these packets of energy, which is the basis of light. It's photon release from the suns, in our case, of course, our sun. And this vibrational resonance goes through a cycle. And this vibrational resonance, as it changes and moves, it elicits different forms of information from the suns, from the sun in our case. And so as this vibration changes in this cycle, which eventually comes round and back to the start, it is changing the reality that people are experiencing as a result. And this is where the whole ancient principle in so many ancient cultures, if not all of them, of cycular time comes in, like the Yugas in the India area of the world, the Hindu area, etc. What the Mayans talked about with the cycles of time, the cycles and the ages, these are created by the vibrational changes coming out of the black holes. And as this cycle moves, and it's vast, and we come in and experience a bit of it, so we think we're going from past through present to future, but we're actually in what I call the time loop. This is what the name of my books a few years ago was called, Tales from the Time Loop. And now I'm beginning to see more and more about how it works. And so as the vibration changes, we move into what people call another age, another era, another epoch. And so there's one age which is known in many cultures as the Golden Age, when everything's kind of, you know, wonderful and all the rest of it. And then there are other ages which are much more challenging. And these are in the cosmic game, ways of experiencing different things. Because when we're choosing to experience them from a level of consciousness, disembodied consciousness, we're seeing that experience in a completely different way to when we're actually experiencing it here.
Sure.
And we are now at the point where we are moving into a new era, a new epoch in this cycle. And that's why the vibration is changing. And suddenly the reality is changing. The sense of reality is changing. And what we're seeing is a change in the information, the base construct information of this reality coming from the sun. And so we're starting to decode different information. Now, this is an area where it's going to be really controversial when the book comes out. I am saying this, staggering as it may seem, I'm saying that that process that I've just described has been hacked into from the moon. I'm saying the moon is not a heavenly body as we think it is. In fact, there were two Russian scientists in the 70s who produced a whole paper saying exactly the same and explaining why. Very, very compelling. And that the moon actually is where this whole hack is being manipulated from. And it's created something that I call in the book the Moon Matrix. It is a it is broadcasting a alternative reality which is hacking into that information from the sun, and it is changing it. It can't replace it because that's the base reality or construct information of this reality. What it can do is change it so that it affects our reality. And then, as I said earlier, all these different things and themes that have come into my work over the last 20 years, they've all kind of come together in this book, because another theme, and this is not just in my book, but many, many others, and a theme in ancient cultures, accounts, and legends all over the world, is how a genetic intervention, a genetic manipulation by the gods, usually the serpent gods. And what I'm saying in this book is that that genetic manipulation was to tune the human body computer into the moon matrix. But because the moon matrix is broadcasting on a frequency that is resonates to low vibrational emotion, like all the things we've just talked about, fear, guilt, frustration, anger, hatred, insecurity, fear of not surviving, the human society has to be structured to keep people in that state, because while they are going to be tuned into this moon matrix, and it's going to be the hive mind of humanity. And that's what they've done. They've connected us in to their hive mind via this moon matrix. And this hive mind, therefore, is feeding people who are in the density that allows a powerful connection, a sense of reality, a collective sense of reality, which means that people basically become clones of each other, like computers. You type in the data, i.e. the situation, press enter, and you get a reaction from people in this country or that country or that country or this culture or that culture, which is virtually exactly the same, given the same circumstances, the same reaction, the same emotional reactions. It's because we're connected to a hive mind. And, you know, when I was writing this book, I came across some quotes from the books of Carlos Castaneda, which were in the kind of 60s period, in which he's quoting this Central American shaman source called Don Juan Matos. And when I read some of these quotes, I kind of took a deep breath, because I'd not seen them before. And this is one of them from Don Juan. We have a predator that came from the depths of the cosmos and took over the rule of our lives. Human beings are its prisoners. The predator is our lord and master. It has rendered us docile, helpless. If we want to protest, it suppresses our protest. If we want to act independently, it demands that we don't do so. Indeed, we are held prisoner. They took us over because we are food to them, and they squeeze us mercilessly because we are their sustenance. Just as we rear chickens in coops, the predators rear us in human coops, human eros. Therefore, their food is always available to them. Think for a moment and tell me how you would explain the contradiction between the intelligence of man the engineer and the stupidity of his systems of belief, or the stupidity of his contradictory behavior. Sorcerers believe that the predators have given us our systems of belief, our ideas of good and evil, our social mores. They are the ones who set up our dreams of success or failure. They have given us covetedness, greed, and cowardice. It is the predator who makes us complacent, routinary, and egomaniacal. In order to keep us obedient, meek, and weak, the predators engage themselves in a stupendous maneuver. Stupendous, of course, from the point of view of a fighting strategist. A horrendous maneuver from the point of view of those who suffer it. They gave us their mind. The predator's mind is baroque, contradictory, morose, filled with the fear of being discovered any moment now. And he just goes on to say, I know that even now you never have suffered hunger, but you have food anxiety, which is none other than the anxiety of the predator who fears that at any moment now its maneuver is going to be uncovered and food is going to be denied. Through the mind, which, after all, is their mind, the predators inject into the lives of human beings whatever is convenient for them, and they ensure in this manner a degree of security to act as a buffer against their fear. Sorcerers of ancient Mexico reasoned that man must have been a complete being at one point, with stupendous insights, feats of awareness that are mythological legends nowadays. And then everything seems to disappear, and we have a sedated man. What I'm saying is that we have against us not a simple predator. It is a very smart and organized predator, paraphrasing. It follows a methodical system to render us useless. Man, the magical being that he is destined to be, is no longer magical. He's an average piece of meat. There are no more dreams for man but the dreams of an animal who is being raised to be a piece of meat, trite, conventional, imbecilic. And as I've put this book together over the last 10 months, although the chunk when I was traveling and talking, but it makes what I've just read makes total synchronistic sense with what I've come across. And that gave us their mind stuff is the Moon Matrix. And as we become more and more conscious, as opposed to stuck in mind, the five sense body mind, we disconnect vibrationally from the Moon Matrix, and suddenly we see things that the Moon Matrix was suppressing us from seeing up to that point. And, you know, I won't go into it all now, it's all in the book in detail, but it's interesting, you know, that when you're born into this world, you kind of accept it for what it is. Well, this is the world, this is how it is. This is why, you know, we are the last generations that are the way things are at the moment, who are going to have the ability to see how things were in terms of life and surveillance and control compared with what they're becoming. Because the young people being born into the world of surveillance and control and microchips and cameras, etc., to them, this is how the world is. This is why they're putting all this stuff into schools now, because they're getting the young generation used to constant surveillance and control. And it's the same with the moon. You look at the moon, yes, there's the moon, it's in the sky, and is it a full moon or is it a new moon or whatever? But you accept it. But when you ask questions about it, suddenly you go, whoa, I never knew that. For instance, there are so many anomalies about the moon. They have no idea how it was created. They have a theory, which is a nonsense theory, and they've had to keep changing it to try to avoid the nonsense, and they're just keeping the nonsense. But there is no way in the world, Rebecca, in the normal course of physics and magnetic fields and all that stuff, that the Earth should have a satellite that enormous. It's bigger than Pluto. I was reading, in fact, some scientists don't talk about an Earth-Moon system. They talk about a dual planetary system. And when you see what scientists have said about how it should be in the normal course of events, if the Earth had a satellite at all, and that's far from certain, given its the power of its magnetic field and the size of it and every rest of it, it would be a very, very small satellite. One estimated it would be about 30 miles around. The Moon is in excess of 2,000 miles around. And then you say, well, okay, where did it come from? And the scientific theory, which is then printed as fact, because when you see so much scientific fact, you say, okay, well, where does it come from? And it's a theory. First of all, they say a planet about the size of Mars crashed into the Earth eons ago. A big piece of the Earth broke off and became the Moon. Well, that's very difficult to follow on when the Moon is very unlike the Earth in terms of its content. At mineral content, etc., etc., and rocks on the Moon have been found to be well, fantastically in excess of any the age of any rocks found on the Earth. And when this Mars-sized planet hitting the Earth became the Moon, didn't pan out and work out in terms of the physics. They called it the Big Whack theory. They came up with a double Big Whack theory to try to explain away the anomalies, and that was that the Mars-sized planet hit the Earth. And then came back and hit it again. You know, I've given you one. I'll give you the right, and I'm going to give you the left. I mean, all that stuff. And then you find that there are metals on the Moon that are not found naturally. That, as one scientist said, there are so many anomalies with regard to the Moon that it can't be answered. That the only thing you can say about the Moon, he said, is it must be observational error. It can't be there. And I've detailed all these in the book, all these anomalies and all these things. And then you look at the extraordinary synchronicity in size, ratio, mathematics, etc., between the Earth, the Moon, and the Sun. Doesn't work with any of the other planets of the solar system. It works with those three bodies. And crucial to making that trinity, if you like, work, is the position, size, etc., of the Moon. It's no accident that, you know, at the time the Moon crosses the Sun in an eclipse, it's virtually the same size when viewed from Earth as the Sun appears to be when viewed from Earth. And all the other incredible synchronicities between the positions of the Sun and the Moon in relation to the Earth at different times of the year. This is all part of the Moon matrix, creating the Moon matrix. And the other thing, of course, that the Moon impacts on massively, even without any transmissions, as I'm talking about, is the hormonal balance and state of the body. And it fundamentally affects what we call the third eye, because it massively affects the Moon, the pineal gland, which is where we go beyond five sense sight into other levels of reality. So like I say, the book's 700 pages nearly, so there's 355,000 words of stuff in there, and there's a lot to say before this stuff makes even more sense because of the connections and the dots. But, you know, when you look at the Moon, people will immediately say, the Moon's not real. It's probably a hollowed-out planetoid. And this is another interesting area, Rebecca, because that's what these Russian scientists said in the 70s. It's a hollowed-out planetoid. It's been, if you like, converted by an intelligence that is vastly, stunningly in excess of what humans can do now. And this is an important point. If you look at what is possible only on the basis of what we perceive to be possible in human society, and that's only human society we know about, by the way, then right. you're never going to understand what's actually going on, because we're dealing with non-human races that are vastly ahead technologically of where we're at. But when you go through the science of the Moon, as one scientist said, the Moon is inside out, because what's on the surface really should be inside. Well, that's what they've said. It's been hollowed out. And then I called Credo Mutwa after I put all this together, my great friend, the Zulu shaman and official historian of the Zulu nation. And I didn't say to him, hey, Credo, I've come up with all this stuff. What do you think? I said, quite simply, can you tell me any Zulu legends? And I found the Zulu legends and accounts to be incredibly accurate over the years, wonderfully symbolic of what you might call scientific truths. And I said, can you tell me any Zulu legends about the moon? And he said, yes. He said, Zulus believe that the moon comes from a long way away. It comes from basically from the region of the Orion constellation. And that two serpent gods, he gives them a name in Zulu lore, created it by hollowing out the moon to create this interstellar craft, if you like. And he said that's why we symbolize the moon, and incidentally so many other ancient cultures do, as an egg, because they symbolized it as the yolk of the egg being taken out. And then he said it was rolled across the sky to the earth, and when it arrived it caused massive devastation on the earth. And when you then look at the ancient legends about catastrophic geological and biological events, which every ancient culture talks about, and one of the common themes is that the earth turned over. Well, the earth is at the angle it is because of its effect and interaction with the moon. We have seasons because of the earth's angle to the sun, and we have the angle to the sun because of the moon. So the seasons were created by the moon, or are created by the moon. And it affects the speed of the Earth's spin. It fundamentally affects life on Earth, the moon. And when you put the Zulu legends together with the science, as I have in the book in great detail, they complement each other in a stunning way. And what is happening now is that as this vibrational change from the sun, as a result of the vibrational change from the black hole, is now starting to impact itself on human perception, they are battening down the hatches to try to keep the moon matrix in control of human perception. So this is one of the key reasons, if not the key reason, for the HAARP technology in Alaska, and they've got other parts of it now in different parts of the world. It's a sub-reality. They're creating a sub-reality to underpin the moon matrix so that we do not go with this changing energetic information, energetic communication that is changing coming from the sun. It's to hold humanity in servitude in the five senses. And this is where the microchips come in, because they want to destabilize the body externally and hold us in the moon matrix vibrational field. This is why they're feeding us food and drink additives that are destabilizing and imbalancing the body electrochemically. It's again to stop us going and connecting with this vibrational change. And this is why they want surveillance and control of people, and the fear of all these different things that are going on, wars and climate change and fear of, even now, fear of law enforcement, fear of all this stuff. It's to hold us in this emotional, therefore vibrational state that holds us in the moon matrix. And those who are able to go beyond that, they are looking at the world in a completely different way, which literally those who haven't gone beyond it simply can't compute. They look at you and they think you're crazy. That's impossible. No, it's your sense of possibility is limited because of what you're tuned to. Tune out of it, and anyone can do it, and suddenly everything will start to fall into place very fast. It's like Sleeping Beauty waking up. And this is why, as we talked about earlier, Rebecca, you've got people waking up now, breaking out of this moon matrix, I would say, who suddenly go, wow, why didn't I see this before? It's so obvious, because you were tuned to something else before. That's why.
Right. You are still in the lower density energetic space.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you know, another thing is that as you look at the moon, David, throughout all of our lives, you know, the moon is in effect control of the emotions.
Exactly.
During the full moon, you notice that people, it seems like literally people just kind of like drool and stuff. They lose their brain. It's like the werewolf coming out or something. And then, you know, when the moon goes into the new moon phase, so to speak, then people have a tendency to calm down a little bit. But, you know, when you start looking at that and, you know, this whole premise of that, and you start looking at that and you're going, well, isn't that interesting? Because that very nature of the up and down emotions also would keep the human being off guard, off centered, not being able to focus, because one day you feel like, you know, you need to go out and you know, beat people up, and then, you know, a couple weeks later you just want to sit and, you know, do the Om thing or whatever. I mean, it is very carefully constructed, and that's what my guidance has been talking to me is about. The infiltration of every single thing has just been very carefully constructed. I mean, the minds that put this matrix, this moon matrix, or whatever it is, together. I mean, oh my goodness, David, this is one heck of a program.
This is how they do it.
Wow.
This is how they do it. And one of the key ways that they connect us to the hive mind and the moon matrix is through the reptilian brain. I've said in the book, you know, we have this reptilian brain, what scientists call the R complex, which is our so-called survival mechanism. It's where we get fight or flight from. It sees everything in terms of, will I survive or won't I survive? That's not just physically. That's, will I survive financially? Will my partnership survive? Will I keep my job? It's all about, or anything to do with survival is the reptilian brain reacting. And so, again, what are we looking at? We're looking at a society that is based on keeping people systematically in a state of fearing not surviving, whether it's financially or in any other way. And once you are in this mental state, this emotional state of fear of not surviving, you are filtering reality through the reptilian brain, the one of the oldest parts of the brain, so they say. I say that reptilian brain did not come from our reptilian past, not in its current state anyway. It was actually part of the genetic manipulation, because if you get beyond the flesh and blood, what the human body is a vibrational construct. And you can liken the reptilian brain to like a microchip. And it's a microchip that is connecting us to the moon matrix. And for that to be done powerfully, once again, we have to be held and manipulated into those emotional mental states that are processed by the reptilian brain. Because in that processing, we're connecting to the moon matrix, the reptilian, I would say, hive mind. And so, once you disconnect from fear and you disconnect from these senses of fearing not surviving, you are disconnecting from a domination of your reality and perception of the reptilian part of the human brain. And in doing so, you're again disconnecting from the moon matrix. And, you know, everything, if you look at it, is about holding us in that reptilian brain. They're always giving us reasons to fear not surviving in some form.
All right, David, hang on with that thought. We're going to go ahead now, folks, and take a long break. We'll see you back here at the top of the hour. Don't go away. There's more coming. American Association of Professional Psychics, America's number one psychic network for psychic readings by telephone since 1989. Their promise? To connect you with a guaranteed, authentic, certified psychic. A proven, accurate psychic who truly cares about you and your needs. So call now, 1-800-717-7887, or visit their website, CertifiedPsychics.com, and receive 50% off a phone reading book from their website. Again, that web address is CertifiedPsychics.com.
Mark Kerr. Be sure to check out my brand new CD titled Blues Nation. Available for purchase at cdbaby.com starting March 8, 2010. You can purchase the physical CD or MP3 downloads of your favorite songs from the album. Once again, Blues Nation, available for sale at cdbaby.com, March 8, 2010.
Hi, this is Rebecca Jernigan. You know, donations are always needed, and for all of you who are able and have donated, a huge heartfelt thanks. But right now, your donations will also get you an Orgon generator. You know, an Orgon generator, it mitigates harmful effects of EMF radiation found in our environment, but it can also help and enhance psychic ability. It can promote health and well-being, creates a calmer home and work environment. It can actually transmute negative energy. It can purify the atmosphere, and frequently it remedies insomnia and chronic nightmares, and it works continuously. So your donations of $10 to $150 or more will get you your own unique Orgon generator piece. Use the links found on the donation buttons for more information, and thank you for your donations.
check out Rebecca's website for the latest Journeys news and more. Log on to www.journeyswithrebecca.com.
Some of this in years past, and I always thought that the moon was I don't know.
There was something strange about it.
Yeah, it was just too weird. It doesn't move. It doesn't go anywhere. It just sits there. So, and I thought, okay, so the moon is in charge of our emotions. And again, then I started looking at the waves of energy that comes off the moon and how it influxes it. You know, it has this, it's like an in and out. It's almost like it breathes or something, this emotional impact, and then it draws it away. Emotional impact and draws it away. It's like a breathing mechanism, so to speak, on an energetic level. And I thought, well, that surely just can't be good for somebody that's wanting to, remain, at peace and calm within if you've always got this influx and then it goes away, and an influx and it goes away. So I'm looking at this, and what would happen if that was no longer here?
Well,
what would happen if it was taken out of our orbit?
Well, I think it would have certainly initially massive and catastrophic impacts on the Earth, because once it's come in and it has changed the nature of the Earth's spin and the nature of the Earth angle, then of course you have catastrophic implications when it happens, and you'd have catastrophic implications when it left. And I am understanding more and more as I wake up more and more, because it's a process. You don't just wake up; it's a process.
Sure.
And that there is another force at work here that is impacting on this, and. You know, I was told it can't all be changed immediately, because the whole thing would collapse. But what I'm sure is going to happen is that force, which is in control of the moon, is going to be relieved of that control. But there's so much more to know, because, again, we're just thinking here on the five sense level. If you look at the moon, that is just a holographic decoded expression of a waveform construct, and so many things, if indeed everything that we think of the physical reality is actually changed at the waveform level, what I call the metaphysical universe, which is the information construct from which we decode this out of that. We decode this holographic reality that appears physical and solid but isn't. And this is why you can, again, solve the mystery of why quantum physicists can say, well, nothing's solid, it's just vibrating energy, and yet everything seems to be solid. So how can something like an atom, which has no solidity, create a solid world? It can only do it because it's not a solid world. It's a decoded world that appears to be solid. And so all change takes place on the vibrational level. And in terms of the human mind, that's what we call the subconscious level. It's in the subconscious levels of mind that we connect with the metaphysical universe, the information construct, and that's the movie reel, if you like. That's where the movie's made, and what we call the physical solid world is the screen on which it's played out holographically. The change takes place at a vibrational level, and that's where the truth vibrations are impacting. We are seeing them play out holographically in people in the so-called physical world, changing their perceptions and what have you. But actually, it's all going on in the waveform fabric of this reality. And it's the same with what's happening in the moon. It's happening there. And like I say, in the book, I go into this in enormous detail, because you know there is enormous detail to put together now about all this. And there are great questions I have about, you know, what happens to the moon as we go along. But certainly it's fundamental to human life and human, particularly emotional, perception.
Well, so, and here's a question, and you may or may not have put this in the book, you may not have looked at this, but what do you think was the purpose behind that big thing that Obama did, which was to bomb the moon? What do you think that was about?
Well, first of all, we found water on the moon and this and that, the moon. It's on one level. I mean, that's not the only level, but on one level, it's underpinning the fact that it's some kind of natural phenomenon when it isn't. But if you notice, we were supposed to go back to the moon, and Obama's just cancelled that.
Sure.
And there's this massive gap between when we went to the moon, and I would say we went to the moon in craft that were much more advanced than the ones we saw on the telly. But there's been this big gap that when we haven't. And I was sent a film by someone about 2 days ago called Moon Rising, which I hadn't actually seen. And it's a documentary. I think came out in the last 2 or 3 years, in which they're looking at the way NASA photographs were smudged and airbrushed, if you like, to take out non-natural phenomena from the surface of the moon. And there have been many, many stories over the years about things like obelisks and other things that have been seen on the surface of the moon. And they get airbrushed out. And sometimes, blatantly just put a square over them, so you can't see them. And you can see the square. It's obviously covering something, but obviously you don't know what. And they're not doing that by accident. I mean, when people have come out in some of these places, like at the National Press Club, I think it was in 2001, when they had the Disclosure Project, and people who knew things about the moon and other things, extraterrestrial activity, who'd worked within NASA and other companies and that relate to it, came out and told their story. And a number of those related to the moon, one in particular, who I've quoted in the book, a man who's worked in the photographic area, and was shown pictures of what he was told was a base on the dark side of the moon, the part of the moon we never see. And it's, of course, was never released to the public. And I would say that it's not the surface of the moon particularly, although, of course, there'll be interesting things on the surface of the moon, because there will be activity there of a non-natural nature. But the real thing is inside the moon. That's where it is. And, you know, so often you see in Hollywood movies and what have you, you see the truth being told symbolically by people who are insiders. And I would say that is the case with Star Wars. I think, well, I've been saying in my books for years that George Lucas is an insider who has access to this knowledge, and he's played out in the Star Wars movie series story that in theme is accurate, and it's not, doesn't happen in a galaxy far, far away. It happens in this one. And interestingly, one of the phenomena is the Death Star, which is looks like the moon, which is a construct, and which is put into orbit. It's like a spacecraft, and is able to control worlds as a result, and has a devastating weapon capability as well, with lasers and what have you. And inside this Death Star are a series of compartments that are in effect a orbiting city or orbiting world inside. And again, when you look at the evidence, I detail it in the book, when the moon has been hit by powerful collisions with various natural or non-natural objects, it's rung like a bell, to quote people at NASA. Right. It's had reverberations going out through it from these impacts, but they don't come back. You know, because basically, great chunks of the moon is actually hollow. This is where this whole colony is, and it's been traversing the not just this part of the universe, but other parts of the universe for a long, long time. That's why they've found stuff on the surface of the moon that's much older than anything found on Earth. This is why they've found moon rocks of a certain estimated age standing in moon dust that is much older. Because as it's traveled around the universe, it's picked up different phenomena from different parts that it's gone through. And interestingly, this seems to be a modus operandi. It seems to be the way that this race, serpent race, this aspect of it, takes over worlds in the way that we've been talking about. In fact, I pointed out in the book that Phobos, the moon, one of the moons orbiting Mars, has been suggested over the years by scientists, if you're going back to the 60s and so forth, that actually it too is a construct. Mm-hmm. And I was sent something yesterday, I haven't fully read through it yet, from the Richard Hoagland website, where, mm-hmm. which is an article about the fact that Mars moon is in fact a construct, and he's not a natural body. What I'm saying is that our moon, our big moon, is exactly the same. It's just a much bigger version of it. And you know, how could anyone build that, or how could anyone hollow that out? And because you're dealing with technological knowledge that is thousands and thousands of years ahead of where we are. And so we have to open our minds to that. Otherwise, we're going to be saying all the time, it's not possible, it's not possible, it's not possible. No, it's not possible for us to do it. It is possible for others to do it, who have a greater understanding of what reality is, and therefore how you can use that knowledge to create things that we can't.
Well, and that being said, you know, I've been chatting with some people here too, David, that have been talking about some different types of technology that's still here on this earth, and we don't even know how to use it. And, you know, these different stones and things that are placed here. We don't even have the technology in this third-dimensional, third-density world, if you will,
yeah.
to create such monuments ourselves and structures or what have you, and because it does not use the same tools, it does not use the same technology. And in order for us to really be able to understand it, we really have to let go of what we think is possible.
Exactly.
And we have to.
Exactly. And, you know, these great ancient structures that we would struggle to build today, where rocks of hundreds of tons were moved long distances and put into perfectly formed walls so you couldn't get a cigarette paper between the joins. They were created by this moon race, this serpent moon race. It's interesting that there's a book I read called Who Built the Moon? Because how it came about was I sat at my computer one day. This has happened so many times in the last 20 years. And suddenly, I'd thought about it here and there over the years about the moon, but it was just on the back burner. And I sat down in this chair I'm sitting in now about, I don't know, 9 months ago, maybe a bit more, and suddenly it hit me. The moon's not real. The moon is hollow. The moon is a construct, and that's where the Earth is being controlled from. And I'm sitting there, and I've kind of had that experience many, many times in different ways, so I wasn't surprised by it, but I thought, whoa, where's that come from? And what I did is I then went on the internet and I thought, well, I'll just see if there's anything. I was not expecting to find anything. And I found a book called Who Built the Moon, which came out quite a few years ago now, in which these two researchers were looking at the anomalies of the moon and how all the mathematics between, like I said earlier, the moon, the sun, and the earth are just fantastically synchronistic, unbelievably synchronistic. And one of the things they do is connect the dimensions and synchronicity of the moon to places like Stonehenge and so these great megalithic structures. And they ask in the book, how can this synchronicity between the moon and these megalithic structures be so perfect? Why? Because the people in the moon created those structures. And therefore, of course, they were going to synchronize with them. And it's another controversial thing I say in the book. Well, not controversial for everybody, but controversial for a lot of people who are into ancient structures and stone circles and stuff. I say that those stone circles and pyramids, because the reptilians, the serpent gods, are the pyramid builders. That's one of their great calling cards. They instigated stone circles, standing stones, other megalithic structures, pyramids, etc., as part of the suppression of the Earth's natural magnetic system, so that it again, one expression of it was it lowered the vibrational field that we are living in. It's part of connecting us to the moon matrix. They do it with other ways too, like putting freeway interchanges on vortex points, by building nuclear power stations on vortex points, by doing anything that will suppress and dilute the power of the Earth's natural meridian energy system, because it's all part of suppressing human capability and human potential. So I say that at least the vast majority of these great megalithic structures and pyramids were put there as to suppress the Earth's energy field and meridian line system as part of this control.
Wow, that's a whole lot of there to think about. We do know from some of the newer revealed archaeological digs that they go in under, sacred sites, for an example, and they get in there and they start digging and they go down and they found 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 civilizations, one built on top of another, on top of another, on top of another, on these sacred sites or energetic sites. So we do know that's been going on. I mean, that's been revealed to us as well. So what you're saying makes total sense when they, you have to look at that. And I look at everything from an energetic viewpoint anyway, David, when I look at
it. You have to.
And I look at it and I go, okay, so we're out in the middle of nowhere and we've built that. Why? Why did you do that? And you go in there and you start looking at the energy signatures, if you will, and you go, oh, that's very, very interesting. So you can see, I mean, for those that are able to sense that, to get out of the third dimensional viewpoint, if you will, if they're able to see that, they're able to go in there and sense it for themselves. And it's very, very well constructed. Like I said, my own guidance, I have a whole thing on my website talking about the constructs. And that's the word that they used to me. My guidance was, the term was constructs, plural, many of them.
That's exactly the word. And it's a construct. I mean, the virtual reality universe as a whole is a construct, because it's just a creation. It's a creation where people or consciousness experiences different things. But what I call the moon matrix is hacked into that construct and modified it to manipulate human perception. And therefore, we do not see, as a result of the genetic manipulation and the hive mind, we do not see as much of the universe as we used to see, as humans used to see. What we now call dark matter and dark energy, it's not pitch black. It's just an area of the universe that we can't access anymore. It's just as the computers in China cannot access vast chunks of the World Wide Web. This is why visible light, which is an infinitesimal frequency range within the electromagnetic spectrum, is so tiny. We used to see far more. You know what they used to say, the gods lived among us. Well, the gods don't live among us now, as they go, because they could see the frequency range on which these, quote, gods operated. When the genetic manipulation happened, it so truncated our visual frequency range, our breadth of decoding what we call human sight, that suddenly those, quote, gods were still where they always were, but we couldn't see them anymore. And this is why you've got situations where animals like cats will react to things in so-called empty space to us, but it's not empty space to them. They can see things we can't see.
Right. It's that interdimensional stuff. It's that the column strings, timelines, whatever. I mean, it's really a matter of how you view that. But if somebody can just sit in their space, wherever that space is, and if they really just reach out and get beyond that space, they can actually start sensing and feeling things that are right next to them.
Right.
It's amazing. It really is amazing. you know, you, you've done an absolutely huge service to humanity, and I'm sure you know that, and I'm sure your trip to the psychic all them many, many years ago probably unfolded quite differently than what you first interpreted it.
Yeah, I didn't know what was happening. I didn't know what was happening for about a year after that. I didn't got a clue.
Well, yeah, and that was probably you shifting and changing and maybe inviting that energetic being that was all around you into your space without maybe you being totally conscious of that. And so what a fascinating way to look at that. This whole construct thing, you know, that just started with me, I don't know, about 6 months ago they started talking to me about this whole construct thing, and every day I experience something new within that whole construct kind of scenario that they've laid out before me, and it's almost difficult to put into words the depth and the level and the enormity, the very fabric, if you will, of its infiltration.
Yeah, and you can't, like I think I said earlier, you can't understand to any depth the manipulation of human society in terms of banking scams and manipulated wars and surveillance programs, etc., and microchipping agendas. You can't understand that until you see this bigger level of reality, because that is the waveform construct playing out in holographic society. And this is how they can play it out so synchronistically, so much in the way that it dovetails and connects, where this happens over here, this happens over there, this surveillance here, this war here, it dovetails so well from their point of view, because the information is encoded in the waveform level of the universe, what I call the metaphysical universe, and then plays out. It's like me programming this computer to do certain things, and then I press enter, and it plays it out on the screen. Same thing. Mm-hmm. And what we need to do, and this is why understanding this is vital, is we need to unpick this hack. And when we do, and we will do that, then this control system will fall, and like I say, it will be like people Sleeping Beauty waking up. Where have I been? What's happened? Because suddenly that hive mind will be disconnected from the human mind, and it's going to be one heck of a ride in the period coming up. It really is.
Well, and you know, I have to say, every time you say that term hive mind, all I can think of is Stargate Atlantis, and they talk about the Wraith and the hive mind, and it just strikes me, that whole hive mind mentality, because and here's a question for you. You can choose to answer it or not. You called them the reptilian, but is that who you think is kind of running the control system within the Moon Matrix?
Oh yeah, definitely the serpent gods. I've gone into that in considerable detail in the book.
Good.
and what's there to be found is that when you look at tens of thousands of years of human existence, the common deity, the common god or gods to all of these different areas of the world is the serpent god. The serpent gods, and then they express themselves in other ways too, because one of the common themes is that Kreta Mutua talks about this, but so do many other areas of the ancient world. The common theme that the serpent gods said to humans, you must never depict us as we really look, or else, basically, simplifying it. And so they were symbolized in other ways. They were symbolized as being certainly clearly not human, but that they weren't actually symbolized, although you can find literal symbolism, but it's symbolism of a non-human form, but not that they look reptilian. And this was to identify this non-human influence without actually overstepping the mark, as they would have seen it, that we depict the gods as they really look. This is why on Credo Mutua's what's called Necklace of the Mysteries, where he's got this massive, calls it necklace, but or he doesn't call it, it's what it's been known for a long, long time. It's like a big copper circle which goes onto his shoulders, and dropping down from this circle of copper is are all these symbols, which Credo and the storytellers before him in the line have used to tell the story of the human race and the story of Africa. And at the front is a human woman, and hanging next to her is a entity that looks anything but human. And the male non-human entity has an erect penis made of copper, which used to be made of gold, Credo said, which takes us up to North Africa and Egypt, and one of the prime centers of their myths, which was the golden penis of Osiris. Well, that's just another expression of it down in southern Africa here. And I said to him when I first met him so long ago now, what do those two mean? And he said, this symbolizes the interbreeding between the Chitahuri, the serpent gods, the children of the serpent, as that translates as, with humans to create this the hybrid race. And this Necklace of the Mysteries is mentioned in accounts 500 years old. And Credo says it's at least 1,000 years old. Well, also, I've seen it, I've touched it, and, you know,
wow,
been taken around the symbols by Credo at his home. And hanging from it is a hand which has the all-seeing eye on it, which has the Star of David, as we call it, but it's not, that's not a Jewish symbol. It's an ancient esoteric symbol, which the Rothschilds took as their symbol, the House of Rothschild banking empire, and it became associated with Jewish people as a Jewish symbol. It's not. It's an ancient esoteric symbol. They found that symbol on the floor of an Islamic temple, which was unearthed near Tel Aviv or in Tel Aviv. So it's an ancient symbol. So that's on this hand that is 500 years old at least, and Credo says 1,000 years old. Also on there is the constellation of Orion on this hand. And what else is on the Necklace of the Mysteries? A flying saucer, a classic flying saucer that people call UFOs and all the rest of it. And he said they are the ships that the Chitahuri came to the earth in, and they came in them from the moon, you know. And and there's constant interaction between the moon serpent gods race and the earth, because by its very nature the moon needs the earth's resources to continue to exist. This is why when Don Juan Matos was talking there about their fear of humans waking up and realizing what's going on and their food source being removed. Humans and the earth are their food source. They are their resource source, because they don't have them themselves. And because it's something that traverses the universe and has been going on for eons and eons and eons, and there are many moons like them, many, many moons like them. Like I say, it's a modus operandi.
Sure.
It means that they are dependent upon the target planet for survival. So that's why they're terrified of being found out. Because the game's up. Because technologically aware as they are, and spiritually dead as they are, they still need the Earth and humanity to survive. And that's why they're desperate not to be uncovered. Well, sorry, guys. The day has arrived.
I'm looking at that situation, David, as you're talking about it, and I'm thinking to myself, is it just enough for us just to become aware of their presence and to change that?
Well, once we disconnect from the moon matrix, we are going to have, as we move along, extraordinary abilities. You know, one of the key ways that the moon matrix controls humanity is it puts us in the left brain. Well, it puts moon matrix people in the left brain anyway. And it does this to a large part by closing down vast areas of what is called the corpus callosum, which is the bridge between the right and left brain. what should happen is information is exchanged between those two hemispheres. So we are whole brain people. But once we are locked in the left brain, that sees everything in terms of apartness, in terms of structure, and therefore we live in a left brain society. We live in a left brain world. It's all about structure and apartness and language and what have you. The right brain is our connection out into infinity, into the infinite awareness, infinite knowledge. And this is why you get these people who get damaged to the left brain, or the left brain's not functioning, that can get amazing abilities, which to left brain society are miraculous and impossible, but they're not. There's this guy, Stephen Wiltshire, in England, who is what they call an autistic savant. And he has staggered people. Like on one occasion, the BBC flew him up over London in a helicopter for half an hour. Just no cameras, he had no camera to record what he was seeing, and no anything. He just had to look out of the helicopter. And he came back and he drew London from the air in enormous detail, windows, number of windows. And this is a guy who, because of his autism, if you like, did not have the ability to count. And yet he got the windows right in the buildings. It's extraordinary. You go on the internet, Stephen Wiltshire, you see what he does. And what this fantastic ability comes from is that they get access to the true, or some of the true potential of human awareness, which we've been disconnected from. So we are not just going to wake up eventually in the way that we think we are now. We're going to start entering a period of unbelievable potential. And that potential is what this reptilian race in the moon cannot cope with, because the very fact that they have a need to control everything means that they are in a state, a low vibrational state themselves. Hence the moon matrix has to be in a low vibrational state, because it's their hive mind, and they have only been able to control humanity by putting us in a smaller box than they're in, a smaller box of awareness than they're in. And once and their box has limitations, big limitations, why they are in their state of perception, which is fear, which comes from fear of not surviving. And therefore, people in fear of not surviving, and in fear in general, they want to control everything, because states of flux terrify them. If they don't know the outcome before the game starts, they can't cope with that, because it's oh no, I've got to know. It can't be any states of flux, can't take it. So they're in this box, and once humans open up to their true potential, even some of it, we go well beyond that box. You know, these reptilians in the moon are at the moment, some insiders have speculated, 10,000 years ahead of us in technological knowledge. But that's a misnomer, because once you cross a certain line in understanding how reality works, as opposed to how we're told it works, which is all these cul-de-sacs of limitation, suddenly you can move 10,000 years of technological development very, very, very fast, because you've crossed that line of understanding of how reality works.
Right.
And, you know, humanity, as this vibrational change imposes itself, as we go into this next cycle of the time loop, if you like, a much higher cycle than the one we've been through just now in the last epoch, we are going to, I mean, what we call miraculous today is going to be commonplace. And the control system must fall, because the control system is based on keeping humans in a, not just a fake identity, though that's part of it, but in a low, desperately low level of their true potential. When that true potential, or a great deal more of it, is activated, the control system must fall, because the very basis that's holding it together will have been removed.
Right. Wow. Given me a whole bunch of things to think about in response to in light of some of the new information, and it's not really new information. What it is information that's been hidden.
Yeah.
I prefer to look at it from that viewpoint. It's not new information. It's just information that's been hidden. So as we bring that hidden knowledge forward, we bring that hidden understanding forward, and we start embracing it and really start focusing on letting go of these constructs, I get this huge expansion. Personally, I get this huge expansion when I look at it, that life can be so much more different, so much more different in the way that we experience it in physical form for anyone that chooses to come to the earth as an experience of a lifetime.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm amazed. I'm amazed at it. I just look at this and I go, wow. You know, it's almost to the point where you can't quite get there because it's so beyond everything that you've learned up to this point or what you thought was truth up to this point.
That's right. And, you know, it's like when you first hear it and it first dawns upon you. I mean, this didn't happen to me because it seemed, as I've been through the last 20 years, it just seems the most natural thing in the world to me. I don't know why, but it does. But you know, in the Matrix movies, when Neo is given the truth of reality, the illusory nature of reality, and he goes kind of crazy and starts throwing up.
Right.
That's some people will experience it in an extreme way because suddenly, I've described it like this sometimes. It's like being born into a box and you think the box is all there is. And everyone in the box with you is telling you it's all there is. And everything just keeps going on as if the box is all there is. And then someone comes along and they lift the lid of the box off and say, have a look at this, darling. And crikey, that shock of realizing how the world is a fraction of what you thought it was, or your world is a fraction of what you thought it what the world was, can take some integrating, if you like. But the people coming along now at least have the benefit of so many who've been through that process, whereas some of the pioneers were doing it completely, you know, making it up as they went along. They had not a clue what was going on and no one to explain it to them.
Right. Exactly. Well, I'm just really, this has just been absolutely one of the most delightful conversations, David. Absolutely delightful in so many different ways. And before we let you go today, though, because you've been kind enough to give us more time than what we originally scheduled, and I appreciate that. I want you to draw attention to your newsletter and also back to your books and your website. Because you're also following a story that has really triggered some things for many, many people in the Holly case. And so I subscribe to your newsletter in order to get the updates to see what's been going on and a different viewpoint from the world. And so if you would just share some of that information and any other thing that you would like to share with the audience today before we let you go.
Well, the website's been completely revamped. It's a heck of a lot simpler now because the other one was getting kind of out of hand because it was growing organically, a bit like Heathrow Airport. You know, you have a few huts when hardly anyone's flying, and then you're suddenly flying all over the place, and suddenly you've got to add bits, and it don't work. Have you ever been to Heathrow? It doesn't work. Well, the new terminal does. The rest of them are just like a mess. But so my website was a bit like that. So we got a blank sheet of paper and redid the whole thing. Human Race, Get off Your Knees, The Lion Sleeps No More is available now. And I do the newsletter once a week. It looks at the world from a different perspective. It might take a subject that's running that week, or it might come from a completely different angle, but it's just what comes to me. I mean, I sit down on a Friday morning and I just wait for something to come to me, and then I follow it through, and it goes out every Sunday. And but the Holly case is obviously available on the site for free, like 99% of the site is, and that has been very, very powerful because it's affected a lot of people. There's a lot of people that have got behind it because of how it's been, it's affected them. And very briefly, on my site, you can get the detail, but this is a Down syndrome girl called Holly Gregg, who lived up in Aberdeen in Scotland, in what's called the Grampian area of Scotland. And she was sexually abused and raped for year after year after year after year, first of all by her father, and then by a string of establishment figures in Scotland, including a judge, what they call them sheriffs in Scotland. And Scotland, as I've been writing about for years, is a major center of Satanism and paedophilia. It's not called the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry for no reason. And what the Holly Gregg case has done, her and her mother Anne, and a wonderful guy who's been helping them called Robert Green, who's been arrested and bailed for the crime of telling the story of what's happened to this girl. This has kind of started to lift the lid on many, many things. First of all, the scale of Satanism and paedophilia, and those two rings are absolutely connected, by the way, in Scotland, which reverberates into the Scottish Parliament, into the whole law system of Scotland, into Lockerbie, the Lockerbie bombing, into the murder of those children at Dunblane School in the 1990s, when a paedophile and procurer of children for establishment paedophiles and politicians in Scotland, a man called Thomas Hamilton, killed a lot of children and a teacher when he went in and just with four guns and opened fire. And that's been covered up because of where the real knowledge of Thomas Hamilton and who he was connected to would have opened up Pandora's box for the Scottish and British establishments. And so all this is running on, and we've got a general election in Britain coming up soon, May the 6th, I think it is. They announced it yesterday. There are a lot of people coming together now to put pressure on the politicians when they're out canvassing for votes and at public meetings to answer questions about the Holly Gregg case, because the police in the Grampian region would not investigate her experience. The head of the law system in Grampian, a lady called Elish Angeloni, would not allow it to be investigated. She was then appointed the Lord Advocate of Scotland, the top law officer in Scotland, and at that level of the whole of Scotland, she's refused to pursue an investigation. The so-called Justice Secretary, the man who let the so-called, and it is so-called, Lockerbie bomber free in August last year on compassionate grounds, a guy called McCaskill, Kenny McCaskill, he will not have an investigation into it, and so it goes on. And it's interesting with the Lockerbie case, because a number of newspapers here now are saying, hold on a second, the Lockerbie bomber who was let out to go back to Libya on compassionate grounds by this Kenny McCaskill guy, because he had weeks to live with, I think it was prostate cancer, he's still alive and flourishing now, all these months later in Libya. What's going on? Well, I'll tell you what's going on. The Libya man, al-Megrahi, did not plant the bomb. It was a CIA, British Intelligence, Mossad operation, which he was used to cover up by taking the blame for it. He was jailed, and then he had an appeal. And the appeal was heard by a man called Lord Cullen, who was the man who oversaw the so-called investigation into the Dunblane killings of Thomas Hamilton. There was a massive cover-up in that so-called Dunblane inquiry to stop the truth getting out. And the first appeal of Megrahi, overseen by Lord Cullen, was again turned down and refused. But then his lawyers secured a second appeal, and that second appeal was on the basis of new evidence that had come to light to show how the CIA had paid, or and in other cases offered to pay, vast sums of money to people to lie in court and produce planted evidence to have al-Megrahi jailed in the first place for a bombing he did not commit. And this appeal was going to be heard in 2009. And this evidence was coming out. And then suddenly, Kenny McCaskill, so-called Justice Secretary of Scotland, announces that he's going to let the guy out on compassionate grounds. And the deal was, we'll let you out, but you've got to drop your appeal. Because he didn't have to drop his appeal. He could have kept it going, even though he was released. But what he did is drop the appeal. And then you had Obama coming out, outraged that the Scottish government could do this with all the Americans killed in Lockerbie. That was all part of the game. It was all part of the facade to hide the fact that they were letting him go, so the appeal didn't go ahead and this information didn't come out. So when you start with the horrors that happened to Holly Gregg and you start playing it out and all the different connections, things connect into all this that wouldn't appear to be in any way connecting, but they are. And there's a lot of people not going to let this go now. And we're going to do all we can to make this the can of worms that it has the potential to be for the establishment, not only of Scotland, but also the establishment of the British government.
And the rest of the world.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's a set of precedents. You know, it does, David.
Yeah.
Well, and I have to tell you, it's commendable. It's extraordinarily commendable because it's time for this kind of stuff. For people's, this is how we peel the onion, so to speak. We get those layers off so they can take those glasses off and start beginning to open up to these new vibrations that are here, or the vibrations that are here, and really start seeing what kind of a world has been created. And only then can a true change really begin for humanity and all of its peoples that are here, and for our experiences and for the future generations that decide to come and experience this earth as well for a part of their time space, if you will. And this is you're just doing commendable work. And again, when your book is out, or it's en route, and it's going to be available when for?
Well, you
I
can.
Know it's available now.
Yeah, you can pre-order it through the website because the way it's going, the first print run. Because you know we're not flushed with endless amounts of money, so you have to have print runs that you can afford because of cash flow. So,
sure.
What tends to happen is the first print run goes pretty quick, so if people want from that print run, they need to order. But it's in transit now, and it should be circulating by the end of the month, at the latest, I hope, but certainly by the end of April.
Well, that will be in timely fashion for when everyone is listening to this show, because this will be aired in less than 2 weeks, so it'll be pretty close to the time when it should be out and about, and this will really capture people's attention. And, you know, again, thank you for the work that you do, and thank you from the bottom of my heart for being here with us today.
Pleasure.
As always, I've always enjoyed this conversation, and I look forward to some additional ones in the future with you, David.
Okay, Rebecca, thanks. It's been a pleasure.
It's been my pleasure, and for the rest of you, don't go away. Thank you, David, really. This
okay.
has just been fun. Have a good night, dear.
You too. Bye.
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 Journeys with Rebecca is sponsored by Fate Magazine, published continuously since 1948 with a broad array of true accounts of the strange and unknown. Subscribe today at fatemag.com.
Oh, Jane, you remember the Italian place?
Where we had that homemade ravioli.
Oh, that was so good. And the salad with the prosciutto.
And that pesto dressing was out of this world.
Croutons.
Oh, yeah, so good. Oh, let's eat there.
Where was that?
Don't remember.
Well, what was it called?
Oh, it was so good, too. What was it called?
What was it called?
Ooh, look at this. Homemade biscotti.
Let me see the ad.
Ooh, and fresh pasta.
Hey, let's go there instead.
Out of sight, out of mind. Don't let the world forget about you. Advertise. A message from the Radio Advertising Bureau, Adweek Magazine, this radio station, and the Famous Radio Ranch.
Hi, this is Rebecca. You know, for a few years now, I've talked to you about my friends and colleagues from Certified Psychics. So I'm really excited to let you know about a new service they provide their clients. They have a method of where you can book your appointment with your favorite or popular reader in advance, so to be sure to get connected. Of course, it's always private and confidential. Now, they still offer on-the-spot readings by their gifted psychics, who their gifts really are top-notch. Or email and live chat readings are still available too.
You know, so there's a lot of methods to suit your needs so you can get your questions answered when and how it's convenient for you. So call 1-800-717-7887 or log on to certifiedpsychics.com.
Email Rebecca with your comments to mailbag@journeyswithrebecca.com. You're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
And thank you all for being here. And obviously a huge thanks to the wonderful guest, David Icke, and his absolutely fantastic amount of time that he gave us today. You can find all of his information from his website. That's davidicke.com. And you can get to those links from the front page of my site or from the newsletter. And thank you all for showing up and participating in the show as well. Thanks to CertifiedPsychics.com, FateMag.com, and TheVintageGypsyBoutique.com. These are the sponsors of the Journeys with Rebecca radio show. And you can show your support for the show by supporting the sponsors and affiliates, and their banners and links are found throughout the Journeys with Rebecca website. And remember, if you can help support the show, please do use the donation buttons found throughout the site. Or if you'd like to become a sponsor yourself or advertiser of this show, you can email me at mailbag@journeyswithrebecca.com or just click on the links found on the advertising page. Please remember to join me every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Saturday for more guest information and superb shows like this. And again, thanks to all the affiliates. We appreciate your support as well. So again, I will see you back here Tuesdays and Saturdays from 8 to 10 p.m. and Wednesdays noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. You are the best audience ever, and I thank you for your support and tuning into the shows. So until we meet again, where will your life's journey lead you? Many blessings and good night.
City Online Radio. Rock, blues, and ghoul talk.